Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
What are the 6 steps to hiring top talent on demand? Hello, everyone. Kevin Cruz here, helping you to achieve your full potential 5 days a week. And in just a minute, we're going to talk about how to hire top talent in an instant. But first, have you checked out the articles on LeadX.org yet? You'll find Dov Barron's article, The Power of Knowing Your Blind Spot, and 7 Reasons Why You Aren't Hearing the Truth by Karen Hurt, and so many others. That's LeadX.org. Our guest today eliminates hiring delays by helping organizations implement a process to fill jobs the instant they become open. He's been named by Cranes to the Staffing 100 list for 5 straight years. He's a member of the Million Dollar Consultant Hall of Fame. His new book is High Velocity Hiring, How to Hire Top Talent in an Instant. Our guest is Scott Winthrop. Scott, welcome to the show.
Kevin, I am thrilled to be with you. Thank you.
I'm excited to talk about high velocity hiring, but first, will you share a time with our listeners when you actually failed and what did you learn from it?
Well, there's a long list, so I had to think about this. And you know, I wanted to pick something that related to the book. And it's about the hiring process itself, that 6-step process you talked about that I'm the pioneer of. I failed miserably in the beginning, not in the process itself, but in my early years of using the process. And simply put, I tried to change too much at once. We were having tremendous success. I figured out how to hire faster. I rolled that out for a bunch of different roles. And at corporate, we were filling all of our jobs in an instant. And you know this, you're a successful guy. Success can become infectious. And it did for me. I thought this was my right. You know, I have success. I wanted our branch offices to have success. So I decided, notice the I, not a group decision. I decided that, you know, we should roll this out to 10 offices in 30 days. Why 10 offices in 30 days? I don't even remember. It was a foolish idea. Now I know that. And my team, yeah, I had a great team that worked with me, and they looked at me skeptically, but I was the boss, and so I won. And we did. We rolled the hiring process out in 30 days. And we put my talent accelerator process, I called it tap in a box, in a box, all the documented materials. And we got on planes and went out and rolled it out. And then it blew up because we were changing too much at one time. They were so incredibly overwhelmed. They were supposed to operate normally while implementing change. And I had to fess up. I had failed. My failure wasn't in the idea. It was the rollout of the idea. And that showed me the importance of incremental change. I believe that the best change, in fact, I know that when you layer things in and you are mindful about the timing of those layers and you build one layer upon another, you're highly successful. And I didn't do that. I crammed it down their throat. And this was so important to me in the 6th step. I include this story in my book, and I teach people about incremental change as part of the process. We can be hungry, we can have success, but we need to be mindful that as human beings, we're not really good at changing a whole bunch of things at once, but one thing at a time.
Well, that's the incredible story that you shared, and a great lesson. And I get asked all the time about, you know, initiatives, change initiatives that have failed, and how do you make change stick? And I think it comes down to exactly what you just said. It people usually are driving too much change in too little time, and change is hard. It's really hard on an individual level, probably harder in an organizational level. So incremental change is the right way to go. And Scott, your new book is again High Velocity Hiring: How to Hire Top Talent in an Instant. Love the title, but Scott, I'm a little skeptical because my belief is that, hey, we got to be really careful when we're hiring. Obviously, top talent is hard to find, and you got to put them through, you know, a gauntlet of interviews and tests and everything. So how am I wrong? What's wrong with my mindset on that?
Well, let me start with, you're not alone. All right. And you said something really important there. You've got to put them through the gauntlet of interviews. And that often sounds to me like a multi-stage process. And you know, that mindset is not uncommon. Many people equate time and effort spent on hiring with making a quality hire. And that mindset goes further. It's, hey, if we take a lot of time at this, the more energy we expend, the better that hire will be. Unfortunately, it's giving them a false sense of control. And it's one of the reasons, Kevin, that two rounds of interviews grew to three, then four, five. Last year in one of the keynotes I did, I was having people raise their hands. I said, so are we still at five rounds of interviews for the same job, or is it increased? And somebody raised their hand and said, oh, no, it's six. And just yesterday I was talking with a CEO in London, major telecom company. They're doing seven rounds of interviews, all in an effort to get it right.
Wow.
So, you know, you think about it. Yeah, wow. You know, taking lots of time to hire doesn't save companies from bad hires. It only saves them from one thing, from making a bad decision. They're afraid it'll be wrong. And look, the CEO I talked to yesterday, people who have bought into this slow to hire, quick to fire mindset, they're not bad people. They just bought into a bad idea. They're stuck in what I call the old way of hiring. That's keeping a job open until the right person shows up. It's created long time to fill, open seats, higher expenses, added effort, frustrated leaders. I could go on and on.
Right.
This is why people need this process, need the book, because I teach the new way of hiring. It's cultivating top talent, and then you wait for the job to show up.
So this is great. And I just want to, again, stress for our listeners, I mean, it's disruptive to have an open job in any organization. A big Fortune 500 company with open spots, it's bad. My world has always been the small to mid-sized companies from five employees to 300 employees. And man, when you've got open positions in those organizations, it's crazy. And it's surprising to me, Scott, that I haven't had this challenge, or I haven't been, you know, like, something's wrong here. Like, why aren't we fixing this? Because it's so painful. And you mentioned it's a six-step process. Obviously, everybody needs to go out and buy high velocity hiring to learn it. We don't have time to go deep into it, but walk us through it. You know, give us the summary of the steps.
Sure. So let's make it simple, because six steps are a lot to cover in a short time. So let's actually look at it in the three phases that those six steps make up. And I want to encapsulate it now in three words: enrich, harness, and sustain. And what we're enriching, harnessing, and sustaining is the flow. It's all about the flow of talent. So let's take that first phase, enriching the flow of top talent. Well, the parts of that are, you got to have a blueprint of who is the right talent, and then you've got to get a better flow of that talent coming in. So in the book, I give this amazing tool called the Hire Right Profile, and it's a pretty simple four-quadrant system. It's the must-haves, must-not-haves, pluses and minuses. But it goes deep in this one document. You've got a blueprint of who works, because you're looking at who's actually worked well in your organization. Then you take that and you go tap into more streams of talent. Most organizations are only effectively tapping into two or three talent streams. And to have a strong flow, I call it candidate gravity, that pull, you've got to tap into eight streams. And that sounds overwhelming to some people, but actually it takes less effort to tap into all the different pools through eight streams than trying to find a limited pool of people through two or three. So now, once we enrich that flow of talent, we've got to harness it. And there's a couple things we have to do there. We have to counter hiring blindness. It's the limits of our human perception. We can only see what we tend to be expecting. The unexpected, it's been proven scientifically, we can't see that. It's why pilots can actually miss unexpected things like a runway incursion. Kind of scary when you think about it. Something as mundane as hiring, of course, we're going to miss things when it's outside the limits of our perception. So we've got to counter hiring blindness, and we've got to conduct better interviews. Conventional interviews don't work, including the newer form of conventional interviewing, behavioral interviews. You know, it's all about talking about doing work versus seeing people in action. So we harness talent by making sure we counter the blindness and do better interviews. And then we sustain that, because we built a better flow, but we've got to sustain that flow. So how we hire in an instant is we build an inventory, a talent inventory. Now, it'd be nice if we could just put people on a shelf, cryo-freeze them. I've always joked about that. This is kind of the next best thing, Kevin, is we just have to have a couple of people ready to go for each of our core jobs. And then we keep that tap flowing. And that rounds out the process. The organizations that have done this can either fill one, several, or many jobs in an instant, and it's really their choice. A lot of the small companies I work with, they choose to fill one core role. Some of the bigger organizations, a lot of their roles, but it's completely flexible based on the organization and how much of a commitment they want to make to hiring in an instant.
Okay, so a follow-up, Scott. When you talked about candidate gravity and, you know, eight streams, for the candidate flow, are you saying the magic number is like any eight streams, or are they specific? Like stream number one is online job boards. Stream number two is your alumni network. Like, what are those streams?
Yeah, so that's actually a perfect question. So the eight streams include things like automation. Automation is the catch-all category for things like job boards, but there's more than job boards. In fact, job boards have been overutilized probably more than any tool. Everybody has access to them who pays for them. So you've got a whole bunch of people going after a small amount of talent. There's other kinds of automation we can add as well. There are sourcing systems. There are resume parsing systems that take resumes and put them into your computer and help you filter through the candidates. Then you have other streams. There are referrals, for example, still the gold standard. We can mine our existing database, which is, you know, if an organization has file cabinets of paper, or they've got a computer system, there are lots of overlooked people. Then you have something that I call talent manufacturing. There are initiatives now where organizations and third-party providers are creating job-ready candidates because there aren't enough to go around. And then one of my other favorite streams are talent agents, staffing and recruiting and workforce solution companies. Those are just a sampling of some of the aid. And here's the key on you bringing this up, because it's important. Every single stream does have some overlap. So yes, you can tap into some of the same people through different streams. But one of the things I discovered in my work that I think make it so cutting edge is no one stream can access all of the talent. In fact, if you have two or three or four streams, which is what most companies are leveraging, you'll have a portion of the talent. To go after all of the untapped pools, all of the people that could possibly fit your jobs, to be able to hire in an instant, to have a surplus of candidates, you have to tap into all eight.
Okay, here's another follow-up. And I know I'm throwing you questions that you might not have prepped for, but what I'm also curious about is this talent pool. Is there any bias towards active candidates versus passive candidates? Do you ever run into the thing where, you know, you're reaching out and I say, hey, Scott, we want to put you into our talent pool and put you through, you know, these things. And Scott says, well, you don't even have an open job right now. I ain't wasting my time on that.
Yeah, that's one of the first things that the really savvy people get this one, because they're thinking, well, why would somebody who has lots of options want to be having a conversation about something that doesn't yet exist?
Right.
And it's a great question. Well, let's look at it this way. Top talent. That's who we really want to work for us. The best talented people out there, the people who fit our roles. They have options. You know, they have more jobs than they could ever take. They've seen how most companies hire. Most companies wait until a job's open and then cast a wide net. And then when they can't fill that job, they keep casting the net and keep casting the net. And it makes them look desperate. It makes them look as an organization like an undesirable place to work. Versus if I'm a hiring manager and I'm introduced to you, you were a referral, I could say, Kevin, I look ahead. I look for top talent who could maybe join us now, in the near future or the distant future, who want to have options when that time comes. And based on what I heard, I think you could be one of those people where I could be an option for you in the future. How about we spend a couple minutes seeing if that makes sense for both of us? You know, to me, that's a bit of an intelligence test for that candidate. If a candidate passes me up on that, they're probably not top talent. Talented people like options. They know that tomorrow they could get the pink slip. They know that things change in an instant, and they like to have options. This approach enrolls savvy people in wanting to be part of an organization because they've planned ahead. And they're also talking to an organization that plans ahead versus flying by the seat of their pants.
Yeah, Scott, that is a great way to frame it up and to talk about the kind of talent you would want anyway. And it reminded me of a conversation I had once with Doug Conant, who was the former CEO of Campbell Soup. And I was surprised. Doug said, and obviously Doug doesn't have your system in place. He wasn't full-time working on talent acquisition, but he said he would reserve one night a week, every week throughout the year, to go out and meet with top talent. And he was just always asking, around, who's the best CFOs that you know in our industry? Who are the best heads of IT? Who are the best this? Who are the best that? And then he would go and have dinner with them. And he said, we never had an open spot, but I would just tell them that, you know, we want to be ready. You never know what could happen in the future. And he said the most impressive people totally got that and respected that it wasn't a knee-jerk search once there was a hole in the organization.
I love that story. And this reminds me of a global hotelier that I worked with and worked with the corporate office, and we worked with the properties as well. And they did something very similar. It was a corporate mandate from the top down that everybody engage in regular talent blitzes. And they would do it at the departmental level. And the way it would work was the same time or split time if there was a coverage issue, people would invest a chunk of time while on the clock sourcing talent. And here's the thing they did that I thought was most savvy. They would source talent, each individual, for their own roles. They engaged in something I called a rising tide of talent. Because you know this, you've been in the corporate world for a long time, you work with a lot of prominent companies. You've met leaders, I'm sure, and they're often newer leaders or middle management where they're stuck. It's not because of talent, it's because the company needs them too much. The company can't promote them because there's nobody to take their place.
Right.
This hotelier solved this problem because they enrolled people in the idea that you're promotable when we no longer need you and you're ready for your next role. So they were very easily able to enroll people to do this. But you want to talk about a talent pipeline because everybody was taking part. And they also knew something else. Hiring is not an HR function, nor is it a talent acquisition function if that department exists. It is a leadership function that is done in collaboration with HR or talent acquisition or staffing providers. And when viewed at that light, savvy people like your example are always lining up talent before they need it.
That's great. And the other follow-up I want to do is on behavioral interviewing, because I see it everywhere. It's sort of a core management training. You know, it's almost like a rite of passage. You get, you know, one of these how to do the behavioral interviewing and what questions are illegal to ask. And I've never thought that behavioral interviewing was particularly effective, and certainly very subject to interviewer bias. You know, whether it's I like your red tie and I didn't like the other candidate's blue tie or whatever it is. So you say, yeah, that's part of the problem is the classic behavioral interviewing. What is experiential interviewing all about?
Well, let me throw this out first. So when we're done chatting today, go do a search. And for everybody who's listening, go to Google or your favorite search engine and just type in the words beating the behavioral interview. And notice how many articles, books, podcasts, you name it, there are on this topic. People have learned to game that system. Why are they gaming that system? Because behavioral interviews are still talking about doing work versus doing work. So look, conventional interviews don't work. Behavioral interviews are one of those because talking about doing something is a poor indicator of whether or not somebody can actually do it. I, Kevin, have always said that candidates do something I refer to as the tell, sell, and swell. It's a form of selling. They're selling themselves. So they tell the interviewer what they think the interviewer wants to hear. They sell the best parts of their background, and they swell the ego. And look, I'm not saying that candidates, for the most part, are being openly deceptive. Sure, some are. It's just normal. It's human that you're going to put your best self forward. I don't believe in letting somebody sell me on just the parts of themselves they're willing to share. I want to seek proof, not promises. I don't want words, I want action. So how my experiential interview works is you experience the candidate doing work. After you look at the resume, you compare it to that higher right profile I talked about in the enriching process, and you determine who's worth talking to on the phone. Then you talk to them, have a brief conversation, and you just briefly talk about things, looking for more indicators that they have those must-haves, those deal makers. And then you have a hands-on interview. That's all an experiential interview is. And to help everybody listening, you could go do this tomorrow if you just remember three words: see, hear, and experience. That's what you're doing in a hands-on portion of an experiential interview. You're looking for proof of fit. You got to see it to believe it. Then you want to hear how the person fits in. Sure, that starts during that phone screening, but then it continues in a face-to-face conversation. Hear how they fit. Do they fit your culture? Then have them do sample work, and you get to experience the quality of them doing that work. we've actually stacked this side by side with behavioral interviews and two interesting things. A hands-on interview like this, the experiential interview, takes a quarter of the time because behavior interviews are long and drawn out because you have to draw out all these details. The accuracy is so stunning. The hiring managers who've engaged in this have said, I could see it myself, versus the behavioral interview, gee, I'm not quite sure, I better ask more questions.
Right.
Therein lies the problem. Seeing is believing, talk is cheap, and both of those statements have persisted for a long time because they're both true.
I love that phrase, proof, not promises. So Scott, before we wrap up, I like to challenge our listeners to get at least 1% better every single day, and that's actually quite a lot. So based on your work, you know, what is something that you want to challenge all of our listeners to do today?
Well, you know, I love this question because of incremental change and my own faux pas on that one. Yeah, this is great. Everybody can improve something by 1% every single day. My advice is increase your flow by 1%. Now, what does that mean? Well, we've got listeners here who are in different places. For some, they're not, they don't have a pipeline of talent. Maybe it's a middle manager who, you know, they're really good in their career, but they've always relied on other people to source talent for them. So their 1% could be asking for a referral today, and then again tomorrow, then two more the day after. And for them, that's increasing the flow substantially. Now, for somebody who maybe has been sourcing referrals, they've got a great network, they're on social media, they go to networking events, you know, they could be increasing their flow of interviews, you know, a conversation every day or an email to set up a conversation and maybe eventually one interview a week. Look, if you just simply ramp up what you do, I equate this often to weightlifting. You know, you build strength by increasing the weight incrementally. If you increase your flow 1% of talent every day of each of the different stages in hiring, before you know it, you're going to be lifting like a champ when it comes to interview. You will be bench pressing talent, so to speak, in ways that you never thought possible. You'll have that talent inventory, and then you can hire in an instant.
Hire in an instant. That's what it's all about. What's the best way our listeners can find out more about you and your work, Scott?
Well, we've made that simple. Go to highvelocityhiring.com. That is the landing page for the book on my site. They're going to find a couple different things there. There's a video about the book that gives a little more advice. They get to see this bald guy in action as well. On the page are links to all of your favorite booksellers, so please buy one and buy one for a friend because faster hiring is the gift that keeps on giving. Also, while there, hey, sign up for my newsletter. I put out things on a regular basis, including the next edition is tomorrow. We've got a great PR expert in tomorrow's edition who's going to talk about how to hire in an instant. So you can access that through our archive as well. Also, follow my blog. Everything I write or say or do is showing up on the blog as well.
Fantastic. Friends, you've just been mentored by top talent hiring guru Scott Wintrip. So don't forget, you can get all the links he just mentioned and the notes from this interview over at leadx.org. You can get Scott's new book from amazon.com or your favorite bookstore. And until next time, it's important to remember, leadership isn't about a title or power or authority. Of course, it's about influence. We are all leaders. The question is, who are you going to lead today?